Man, this thing is rolling along. We've had a great show so far. Welcome in. Final hour here with you on 104.5 The Zone, at least here with me, and then I'll turn you over to Blaine and Mickey and 3HL for the remainder of your afternoon. A lot of good stuff to get to. We're taking your phone calls as well on the Titans and the Colts, on Taylor Lewan, on DeForest Buckner, on the matchup that will be at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. I also have some Titans tickets for you that I'll tell you how to win at the end of this segment. So make sure you're listening very, very closely. Coach Rick Venturi will be here with us coming up next. I am very excited about that. Coach Venturi is one of my favorite people to talk to in all of football. He is the Colts version of Coach Mack. Few do it better than Coach Mack. Coach Rick is 1B to Mack's 1A. We will get to some sound from Jeffrey Simmons here in a second. Then I'll tell you what I saw from the Colts against the Rams, because I watched that game back on Game Pass a couple of times yesterday after the show to kind of see what the Titans should expect and how the Titans should be approaching this and how things kind of look different. And I understand that things were kind of getting out of hand by the time that Wentz got hurt and Eason went in, but he did throw an interception, so enough there to cause a turnover. We'll get to that here in just a second, but the phone lines have been lit up today because we've been talking about expectations for Taylor Lewan. He did not play against Seattle, tweaked his knee in pregame warmups. Fans have been critical, of course, coming off the week one performance, and we've been basically having this discussion about what your expectations are of your franchise left tackle, because he is still, at the end of the day, your franchise left tackle, even if he drives you crazy sometimes. So we go to Lee, who has been waiting patiently and wants to chime in. What's up, Lee?
Hello?
You're on the air, bud.
Hello?
Yep.
Yeah, I was listening to what you had just said about Taylor Lewan. I was curious, so why would he be on the field if he's not 100%? Sunday, when I saw him practicing and his leg went out, I said, it's over for him. Is he concerned about being traded, or what is it the Titans have planned for him?
Well, you mean, hang on, Jeff, or excuse me, Lee. You mean from a standpoint of, like, traded this year?
Well, I've watched the Titans ever since they came here. And it seems that they never really keep a player long. And it's almost as if they get their stocks up or they pay too much for a guy and then they trade him. I'm trying to understand if Taylor Lewan is so good, why wouldn't they save him for later on?
Well, okay, so there's a couple parts to that, Lee, and I think, you know, I don't like the analysis of because future iterations of the Tennessee Titans didn't pay franchise players, then this iteration of the Tennessee Titans doesn't keep franchise players, and that's been honestly the complete opposite under John Robinson from what's been in years past. So from a getting Taylor out there before he may be 100%, it's football. I mean, rarely are guys at 100% playing the sport of football. Bud Dupree is not 100% and playing the sport of football. Jack Conklin, when they put him out there in 2019, was not 100% and playing the sport of football. Carson Wentz is trying with two sprained ankles to play in a football game on Sunday, which Ben Roethlisberger is expected to play against the Bengals with like a torn pec. These guys, it's insane what they do for a living. So that it would be surprising to you that, and especially as somebody who's watched the Titans since they came here, are you not familiar with the era of Steve McNair? We just spent, you know, a good portion of the first hour talking about what McNair would play through during a football season. When it comes to Lewan and trade possibilities, I mean, any inclination they may have to move Taylor would not be until next year. I think that it's not something I'd outright dismiss, but it would not happen in 2021. That's not in the immediate future if a possibility is being looked at. And it's been a possibility that they're going to have to look at because the finances change a great deal next year. RG Titan 901 on YouTube says, Buck, they don't want to lose their job, so that's why they lay it on the line and go out there and play, in my opinion. Yeah, there's a degree of that, too. Not just that the coaches need them out there from the availability. Hey, can you go on Sunday? Is the first thing that's asked when the week of work begins. hey, are you going to be ready to go on Sunday? Are you hurt or are you injured? There's a difference in the world of the NFL. And certainly in college football. When, you know, Alex Smith gets a concussion and then loses his job to Colin Kaepernick, and Colin Kaepernick goes on the tear that he does. It's happened to Alex Smith a couple of times where he's gotten hurt and then been superseded by, you know, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, that was the plan all along, though, with Mahomes.
Oh, sure. And it may have been the plan with Kaepernick. But I'm just saying, like, there are many examples of dudes getting injured and then losing their jobs because they're just not available. Now, Lawan is not that, because the drop-off as a total package from Lawan to Sam Brailo is enough to make Lawan worth having out there, even if he's not completely healthy. The question is, how close to 100% can he get a season removed and not even a full year removed from tearing his ACL? That's the question. And we won't have that answer until probably, you know, right around the midpoint of the season. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. What we're going to talk to Coach Rick Venturi about coming up next is this Colts team, how they have found themselves in an 0-2 hole, what has gone wrong for them, even in a game where they made a damn good effort to come back against the Rams and were unable to do so. It's an interesting dynamic that the Colts now have a quarterback, because I don't know if we've mentioned this over the course of today's show, Lucas. I know we talked about it pre-show. But Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network is reporting that Brent Hundley took the majority of the starters reps, and he's on the practice squad. Jacob Eason, who has been on the active roster, may not start in the game. Hell, you may see both of them. And we'll talk to Coach Rick Venturi about this of the Colts Radio Network coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you, 104.5 The Zone. Now, it's my great honor and privilege to bring Coach Rick Venturi on the line of Colts.com. You can hear him on the broadcast. He's one of my favorite people to interview when it comes to the Colts and the Titans. Coach always has such great insight. Man, I really appreciate you taking some time to catch up with us, Coach. How are we?
Oh, we're doing good, Buck. Looking forward to another clash here with the Titans and the Colts. Going to be an interesting matchup. It's kind of funny that basically in recent years, basically the advantage has gone to the road team. So, you know, Colts a little banged up coming in there, to put it mildly, but you know, it's always going to be a dogfight.
No question about it. And in fact, if you're listening right now and you want to attend this dogfight, you can be caller number 5 right now, and Lucas will give you a pair of tickets to the Titans and the Colts. 615-737-1045 while we talk with Coach Rick Venturi. So we don't know who the quarterback is going to be at this point, Coach, right? It's Brent Hundley taking a lot of the snaps with the starters, according to the reports, and I'm sure that's been the observation as well, despite him being on the practice squad. He does have NFL starting experience in a couple of games. And then there's Jacob Eason, who did fill in when Carson Wentz went down with the injury. What can Titans fans expect from these two players, who they may actually see both of against the Titans on Sunday?
Well, they're actually complete opposites, to be honest with you. Eason, who basically took the majority of the first team snaps in training camp, because really, you got to remember, Carson was out. He really didn't, after the first 2 days of training camp, he was out.
Yeah.
So Eason took the majority of first team snaps. Ellinger kind of came on late and took some, but basically it was Eason who took most of it. And, you know, he's kind of a classic throwback, kind of an Osweiler type guy, tall. I mean, he's got a shotgun. I mean, really, there isn't any throw that he can't make. He's got some athleticism. He's not going to be one of these modern-day running quarterbacks, but he can really fire it to the outside of the field. He doesn't have experience one. I mean, he has never been in an NFL game for real. So you kind of have the classic big-arm kid, you know, without any experience. And then when you go with Hundley, it's really just the opposite. You've got a guy that has started some games that – has been on NFL rosters and NFL teams. He doesn't have the gun by any sense, any stretch that Eason has, but he's a very mobile guy. He's a guy that can get out on the perimeter. He can extend plays. He can make things happen. So,
You know, I think regardless of what's in the deep recesses of Frank's mind, and I know he has it in his mind, he's going to make sure that the Titans have to get ready for two styles, to be honest with you. And then, you know, it'll unfold. You know, we are seeing a little bit of two-back quarterback system in the league. Maybe he does that. You know, we'll find out soon enough.
No question about it. Coach Rick Venturi is here with us on 104.5 The Zone, breaking down the Titans and the Colts. So when we talk to the defensive players here in Tennessee, Coach, at practice, Jeff Simmons and Harold Landry, who was just on the show earlier today, about, you know, what it is that the Colts like to do. In basic principles, they are a run-first team, even going back to Reich working with Andrew Luck and through Jacoby Brissett and through Phillip Rivers. And that seemed to be how they were so effective in that first drive against the Rams. I watched that game back in its entirety a couple of times on Game Pass, and the scripted, you know, the first series typically scripted, the scripted plays they executed to a T until they stalled out in the red zone and went three straight dives, then went run action and Wentz got sacked. What changes without Wentz at quarterback, or are they going to be fundamentally the same kind of football team on offense?
Well, I think mentally they would like to be a balanced team, very good run team. Now, we haven't been. You're right, Buck, in the sense that we started that game out really good, but when we try to hammer it in that red zone, that was really our Achilles heel. That's really cost us the game with the Rams. Your observation is perfect. You know, but we're going to have to run the ball better than we're running it. I mean, we've got good running backs. Now, the problem has been the offensive line has been fluid. I mean, we got 60% of the game out of Fisher. You know, that's his first start. You know, he hasn't been here. You know, we brought him in there. Now, he's made a pretty good recovery to be this far along in the third game after the Achilles. But then to make matters worse, we lose Braden Smith, who doesn't play last week at the right tackle. So, you know, we've had trouble on the edges, you know, both in protection and in running the ball. You know, I feel like that we're going to have to get a little bit more diversity. I think with our good offensive line a year ago, we could line up and pretty much just zone it all day. But you know, without that ability to just knock them off the ball at five positions, you know, I look for us to go back more into 18 and 19 when we were a little bit more diverse in the running game. But, you know, if in fact we play with one of those backup quarterbacks, then the running game becomes even more vital. You know, in both cases, both guys will be more effective, of course, with the play action, if in fact we run the ball. If you don't, then that's out, and then we get into a drop back game, which isn't our forte right now.
Coach Rick Venturi is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. So let's take a look at that matchup in the trenches, Coach, because of course, you know, last week the conversation was about Quentin Nelson and Aaron Donald, and now it will be Jeffrey Simmons and Quentin Nelson in this Colts offensive line that does look a little different than it has in years past. I thought that was one of, and I don't know what your observations have been from tape study in this two-game sample size that we've seen from Tennessee, but I looked at the game that they were playing up front with Jeffrey Simmons and Denico Autry, using Denico Autry to set the pick and bringing Simmons around in these stunts as the looper, and I thought it was one of the more effective moments that they've had with them generating interior pressure. I know you're familiar, of course, with Autry from his time in Indianapolis. What did you see out of Jeffrey Simmons in that game against the Seahawks?
No, I think you're exactly right, Buck. That they were very effective with that nose tackle twist. There isn't any question about it. And I thought, you know, I thought basically the Titans in the first six quarters were a little bit out of sync. Of course, they have new coordinators. Todd Downing was actually my assistant defensive assistant at St. Louis, so I know him very well. But I thought that the Titans really found themselves on both sides of the ball in the last two quarters against Seattle. I thought both offensively and defensively, they really rose to the occasion. And part of it is exactly what you say. And I thought that, you know, when you get that dime package out there, which they played a lot in that fourth quarter, I thought that was by far the best ratio. You have Landry and Dupree outside, and then you get Autry, who I have tremendous respect for, in there with Simmons, you know. And then I thought that Jackson came in and Cruikshank came in, And I thought that was the best ratio that I saw all day. And I think that gives him a very, very formidable rush package. I really do. You know, I think Simmons is ready to break out. You know, he hasn't yet. Landry has always given us trouble. And Dupree is going to get better as the season goes on, as he comes back from the injury. And I just really like Autry wherever you play him. So, yeah, I think you're exactly right. The Autry-Simmons combination inside is a very difficult one.
So let's take a look at the Colts defense against the Titans offense, because it is clear and obvious to everybody how they found their stride. And really, it was impressive. What made it as impressive, at least to us as objective viewers in the press box, was where they found their stride, down by as many points as they were in Seattle. And I know that you've been to that stadium before. That was my first time, Coach, and that was it was an incredible experience to be able to witness. But Derrick Henry, I thought, was made more impressive by the fact that the Titans were not getting the kind of push up front that the performance, that the statistical performance, might indicate that the running attack was having. What were your observations from the backup offensive lineman that the Titans had to play, similar to what the Colts are dealing with right now, with Taylor Lewan and Roger Saffold not in the equation?
Well, I thought that Brewer and Sambrello actually went in there and did a really good job. I also, you know, I got to credit my good friend Todd Downing. I thought that his finest hour was that he didn't panic with that 14-point deficit.
Right.
And he kept Henry alive. Now, it wasn't all rushing. There was a lot of checkdowns in there. But there's a tendency, and particularly for a first-time coordinator, that when you get down two scores, it's just drop back, drop back, drop back, which is really the Achilles heel if Tennessee ever gets put in that position. Tennessee is going to be a much better run-oriented play-action protection team than they are, even if they're healthy, if they get into a have-to pass. And I thought they did a really good job of that. And, of course, you know, the big one, if you stay with him long enough, I mean, the guy's a steel horse. I mean, he busted that long one, the classic straight arm. He runs away from people. He is just such a tremendous player, and he does it with such ease. You never see him look like he's ever on a drastic cut, but he'll see that backside and get out the door. You know, he builds speed. He can bend the pile, you know, and he was effective as a check down receiver. And again, I thought the best thing the Titans did was kind of stay with him. You know, they never lost their poise totally. Tannehill was very, very steady in that last drive to tie it. And so, you know, I kind of alluding to what I said before, both offensively and defensively, I really felt like they found their stride in the most terrible place to have to play in pro football. That is really an accomplishment.
Coach Rick Venturi here with us on 104.5 The Zone. We're breaking down the Titans and the Colts on Sunday. So I look at the front seven of Indianapolis, Coach, and I still believe them to be one of the most fearsome in the league. I mean, we know what Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner are. Bobby Okereke is coming. He's as athletic a linebacker as any that I've seen in recent memory. But the weakness appears to be in the secondary. And, of course, the Titans are touting this wide receiver duo that they now have in A.J. Brown, who's coming off a tough performance, and Julio Jones, who kind of found his stride in Seattle. How do you expect the Colts to try and counter those skill position players, given that the secondary is a little banged up right now with Xavier Rhodes not having practiced as of late and Rocky Sin still kind of having inconsistent performances from week to week?
Yeah, the biggest problem, in my opinion, is that the Colts have really shot themselves in the foot on defense. I mean, we've given up five touchdown passes that were defensible, that guys were either out of position or didn't play technique sound. Now, don't get me wrong. We've played good people, but we haven't played well. And until we eliminate those big plays, we're going to be in trouble. Now, the problem that you have with Tennessee is with the steel horse back there running the ball and with a very agile and underrated quarterback, you know, and now with those two guys, and you know, A.J. had that day of drops, but that's not going to persist. And I thought that, you know, that obviously Jones looked outstanding in the game, is they really have a diverse offense now. They can run it, and they can play pass it and hit you. I think the biggest thing the Colts have to do is really twofold. They have to stop the run, and that's going to mean you're going to have to play a lot of eight in the box, and then you got to protect the deep ball. You know, if they consistently, you know, if he can go 25 for 30 in a drop back game, you know, so be it. But what you can't do is let them beat them at what they do best, which is running the ball, play action deep. You got to make them work for it, work for it, work for it. We all know that if you force a team to drive the ball 80 yards and you don't give up an explosive play, somewhere along the line you may get a penalty, you may get a mistake, you may get a blown assignment, and you can catch up with it. What you can't do is give up the big plays, particularly in the passing game, that we've been getting up. Now, I think we can do a hell of a lot better, because a lot of it has not necessarily mean that we've been out-talented over there. We've just been outplayed.
Yeah, that you're basically speaking to Titans fans based on their defensive performance last year and the kind of miscommunications that they would have in the secondary and frankly with their linebacking core as well from a year ago, and still needing to get ironed out because they gave up three passing plays for two touchdowns and 182 yards against Tyler Lockett and Freddie Swain in Seattle. Coach, the one of the Titans' favorite passing plays to run is this quick play action with in-breaking routes. We've seen A.J. Brown eat off of it. We've seen Corey Davis have success with it when he was here in Tennessee. It's something that Julio Jones is capable of busting wide open with the post-route concept that they like to run alongside it. How will the Colts adjust to that and prepare for that? Because that's one of the I think even describing it to the radio audience, they can visualize the play action concept that I'm talking about.
No, you're exactly right. They'll run that ball, then they'll play fake, and they'll have Julio coming in on a dig, and you know all of a sudden they'll suck those linebackers, and he's wide open. I really believe that what the Colts have to do, the Colts are allowing way too much free access into the back end. They're not collisioning people. They're playing very soft zones. They're not matching people underneath, and they're not getting up there and bumping, running, and making it hard on people. And I think with AJ and Julio, you have to take them away at the line of scrimmage. I don't think you can let them have free access into your secondary because of that play action. But that, as you said, what that play action does is eliminates the second level of coverage. You got linebackers, you know, jumping on 22. They're all going to be flying, and then it's opened up. So you have to disrupt. You have to divert. You have to make those passes take more time so that then you can get pressure off the edge, which has hurt the Titans. I mean, even though they were the second-best team in the league last year in turnover ratio, they have had strips now off the backside, off the left side on Tannehill. So, yeah. But if you're going to get those, you have to buy a little bit of time for your defensive ends to get off that edge. And if you let those guys have free access all day, then you play right into the Titans' hands.
Coach Rick Venturi, always good to catch up with him. The analysis has been exceptional. Coach, I'm so happy that you took some time to catch up with us. I'm looking forward to the game on Sunday. I know you guys are as well, and continued success throughout the course of the season.
Well, we're going to be there on this one. A year ago, we were doing it from the center back home. But yeah, we're going to be over there for this one. So I'm really looking forward to it.
No question about it. Coach Rick Venturi, kind enough to give us some of his time here on 104.5 The Zone. Have a great broadcast, Coach. Take care.
You too, Buck.
Ah, the man. I love him. He is so much fun to talk to. Honestly, before I started doing radio for The Zone and before I got to hang out with Coach Mac once a week, Rick Venturi was one of my go-to guys. He is one of now I know you would look up his coaching record at Northwestern, as Lucas did, and cite, you know, what the hell? what is it, 1-31?
Something like that.
It's not great. But he has been with the Colts radio network for quite some time. I so enjoy talking ball with Coach Venturi. Just, in fact, talking with Coach Venturi before and going back to college, before I got the opportunity to start interviewing Mac on a regular basis, helped prepare me to interview Coach Dave McGinnis. Because when you're talking football with these kind of guys, you're talking at a completely different level. And I love the kind of analysis that they bring to the table. All right, coming up next, we'll wrap up the show. We got polls. I got some thoughts on Thursday Night Football as well that you can hear tonight on 104.5 The Zone. We'll do that next. I'm Buck Rising. This is, as I mentioned, The Zone. floating right along. Another show nearly in the books. It's been a fun one. I think we got a good grade today too.
An 8.4.
Is that high marks? Is that the highest of the marks?
No, we got an 8.5 on Tuesday.
What was so special about Tuesday?
We just had a good show.
All right, very good.
We're averaging like over an 8 this week.
I mean, listen, you know, I'm biased, but I think we're pretty damn good. So it's nice to have that. It's like Tony Kornheiser says, affirmation, baby. Love to see it. So if you missed any of this 8.4 graded show, you can catch it all via the podcast, The Buck Rising Show. Harold Landry, Coach Rick Venturi, all of the people bitching about Taylor Lewan. It's a great time. So go subscribe, rate, and review. Speaking of podcasts, I got two more to plug, then we'll go to the polls. 615 Sessions podcast comes out this afternoon. Myself, Steve Lehman from News Channel 5. If you have Titans questions that you want us to answer on the podcast, there's still time to send them to me via DM on Instagram at Buck Rising, R-E-I-S-I-N-G, and I'll make sure that we get to them there. Also, the install with Greg Cosell is out. Analysis of the Titans and the Seahawks, of the Colts and the Titans, of the Colts and the Rams, of the Rams and the Buccaneers, because that's a massive game this week. I'm pissed that's not in primetime because I'm afraid I'm going to miss some of it because I'll be at the Titans game. But that is must-watch television, you know, a week ahead of Tom Brady going back to New England for the first time, which is spicy as hell. So go subscribe, go rate, go review, make me happy, and I will reciprocate by doing the polls.
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Because the polls have closed and the votes have been tallied, it's time for a poll update. And he's a good boy. Buck Rising Show producer and correspondent, Lucas Panzeca.
Speaking of Rhett Bryan, by the way, he's hosting J. Mark Ramone tomorrow with Ramone Foster. I think Mike Keith's going to be in the studio. They have done a great job on the OTP this week. Bum Phillips, Warren Moon, Oilers homecoming week, so must-listen stuff. Go ahead.
Which Titans player impressed you more at Seattle? Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, or Fat Randy? 47% say it was Henry. 29% say Tannehill. 24% were impressed by Randy Bullock.
Did you really put Fat Randy in the poll?
That is what you wrote.
Wait, I wrote it?
Yeah, you wrote that down in the grid. Okay. I just literally copied it in there.
All right, well, that was just for the purposes. I'm trying to avoid fat shaming Fat Randy.
Yes, that would be good.
But you've brought us back to this place.
It's your Twitter account, man.
Yeah, who runs it?
Well, Derrick Henry, the majority. Fair.
I mean,
one of the best games of his career.
I spent a whole hour on it. You want more?
Which Colts backup?
What do you want me to do?
Your thoughts, Buck. Which Colts backup would you rather see on Sunday? 63% would rather see Eason. 37% say it's Hundley. I think I would rather see Eason in the place of the Titans. This is a dangerous game to play with Colts backup quarterbacks. They've been burned before.
This is the Russian roulette of NFL football.
But if you're the Colts, you're not really pushing the ball downfield with either of these guys, right?
That's all that Eason can do. What do you mean? Did you not hear Venturi say he's got a shotgun?
Well, and you're taking a lot of risks. I mean, do you not ride with Brett Hundley, who has started in this league before, manage the run game, and leave it up to your defense?
And lost is what you meant to say. Brett Hundley is not good.
He's not good. Neither of them are good.
Yeah, but that hasn't stopped the Titans from losing to Colts backups before. All right, here's the deal. I would say that Lucas is correct in his assessment that Jacob Eason would be the preferable option for the Titans to play on Sunday because of the inexperience. Brett Hundley presents a greater risk to you because he has more experience reading NFL defenses. I don't think the Titans have played Brett Hundley because where was he between Green Bay and Indianapolis? Because I think there's been a stop in between there. Anyway, a conversation for another day. Long story short, he was a Seahawks backup.
And a Cardinals.
Okay, so he's had a couple of stops in the league, none of which the Titans have faced him. Regardless, Brett Hundley is pedestrian or has been pedestrian across the course of his career, but so had Josh Johnson when he came in here with the Washington football team a couple of years ago and took you down to the wire. So the less experienced option is the better for the Titans fans to wish to face.
Well, I would think of it almost as like a similar game plan when the Titans had Blaine Gabbert, that game against the Houston Texans, the fake punt game when Byard threw the touchdown to Cruikshank.
when the starting tackles were Kevin Pompfield.
No tackles, no quarterback. They were missing so many people that day.
Tyler Mertz.
Blaine Gabbert wasn't, you know, dropping back and controlling the game from the pocket. They were using the run game. They played good defense, and they found an edge in special teams. If you're the Colts, is that not kind of the route you feel you have to go here?
One would imagine.
Which Colts, or no, we already did that one. What's your second favorite NFL team to watch? V-Love says, whomever's in the parlay.
Yep.
Puka says,
bless him. Wait, quickly. Bless him for being grammatically correct. Thank God.
Yeah, that was actually a good job, V-Love. Puka says, usually the Packers, the Saints when Breeze was the quarterback. Bucket says, whoever I put money on. I think that's a common opinion. Yep. Grit says, whoever's playing the Jags.
Grit's going to be at the game. Should we do something with Grit?
Yeah, Grit's the man. That dude is all over the place.
Now, I don't know that people know who we're talking about necessarily, because I think he's more Knoxville famous than Nashville
famous.
Yeah,
@ Grit Knox on Twitter.
Grit Knox is a hell of a follow if you're a Titans or a Vols fan. I think he has some kind of affiliation with Barstool, and while I may not think much of the parent company, I do respect a lot of their talent there.
John Miller says the Titans are his second favorite team to watch because he was a Saints fan before the Titans ever came to Nashville.
Heady play. So I asked this question, and this kind of has to do with Thursday Night Football, which you can hear the coverage of on 104.5 The Zone tonight. I really enjoy through 2 weeks watching the Carolina Panthers. Now, week one was not a great outing for them, but I think that they're what Matt Rhule and what, my guy from LSU, the offensive coordinator, who's like my age, who was the offensive coordinator.
Joe Brady,
who's like 33 or 34 or something like that. Going to be an NFL head coach in the near future. The way that they're running that offense, and they've got a great collection of skill position talent, which I'm sure hurts the Titans because Terrence Marshall is one of them as their third wide receiver, the rookie out of LSU. But Carolina, who plays the Texans tonight, and all Titans fans, of course, should be rooting for Carolina to defeat the Texans. But I have really enjoyed their 2-0 start. I saw some great cut-ups of Brandon Thorne analyzing. Brandon Thorne, who's the offensive line and defensive line expert for The Athletic, breaking down some Daquan Jones snaps, which, of course, Titans fans are familiar with. But watching him get interior pass-rushing presence is something that I haven't seen Daquan be able to do, at least here in Tennessee. He had some really impressive snaps against the Saints, which are one of the better offensive lines in football, certainly one of the more talented offensive lines in football. So I'm looking forward to this Carolina-Texans game tonight because I think Carolina, maybe this year is the easy answer is like the Bucs or the Rams or people that score 40 a game or something like that, Chiefs, the Ravens. But like off the grid, off the board, I'm going with the Panthers.
Yeah, it's a sneaky good team.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold's off to a nice start. By the way, Daquan and Naquan Jones will be on the field, you would think, as Naquan got moved up to the active roster yesterday. So if they are on the field at the same time on Sunday, we will once and for all find out if they are the same person or not.
Why would Daquan's playing tonight?
Oh, wow. Never mind.
Very good.
Yeah, my brain just did a complete circle.
Also, Naquan Jones is wearing Daquan Jones' old number. He's wearing number 90 on the practice field.
Just to throw a wrench in all of it.
It's deeply
disoriented. Okay, so, all right, so we still have no proof that they are not the same person because Daquan could play the game tonight and then come to Nashville on Sunday.
The video, the picture edits with Daquan Jones' headshot with a mustache and a hairpiece on to make him Naquan Jones'
evil
twin brother. It's gold, Jerry, gold.
What NFL team is the Titans' biggest rival? The Ravens, the Colts, the Jags, or other? Virtually nobody said other or wrote in any other options, and you got about 1,600 votes on this. So 52% say it's the Ravens. 45% say Colts. Only 2% say Jags. A buddy of mine texted me this poll, said, how in the world is this even a conversation? It has to be the Colts, right? How could you possibly consider the Ravens a rival when they're not in your division?
Well, because the Colts win all the games, or not all the games, but a lot of the games against the Titans. It's not really a rivalry.
Yeah, and it depends on how you look at it. Do you consider the rivalry just the most important game on your schedule every season, or do you consider it the team that you hate the most based on your series with that team?
And that'd be the Ravens. Now, the Jags should have gotten more.
Yeah, very surprised by that.
Well, I'm not, because they're clearly going recency bias, right? The Ravens are the most recent team that they've hated, like they've hated any other team. And the Jags are, that opinion is now colored by the rampant incompetence that appears to be happening in Jacksonville. So it should have been a fun game this year, given Mike Vrabel and Urban Meyer and first overall pick and all this other stuff. But the Jags suck, like loud suck. So that kind of takes the juice out of the equation.
For the Ravens, it's a blend of both historical significance and recency bias, because you had a stretch there where when the Titans are not good, that game doesn't matter. It only matters when they're set to meet in the playoffs, and they did a lot in the early days, and they have a lot most recently.
Yeah, it goes back along. So it transcends generations, right? So where you got a bunch of old head Titans fans who remember the Ray Lewis, Eddie George stuff, and you have a bunch of new Titans fans or younger Titans fans that are looking at the stomping of the logo and Khalif Raymond and Jonnu Smith with the butt cheek touchdown and all this good stuff that's made that a little more juicy.
Plus, the series is 13-13 all time.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, that's you don't get that a lot.
Look at that. The more you know. I don't know if we've made you smarter today, but we've had a hell of a show. Blaine and Mickey will make you smarter and have a great one coming up next.